This is CliffCentral.com.
It's the Rolling Stones, Miss You. What a song. What the matter with you, boy? That's the actual line he uses. All right, good morning. It's Wednesday. In a little while, we're going to meet the guys from Land Rover Rustenburg. This is very interesting because apparently they collect your car. I mean, I know Rustenburg is not where everyone in South Africa lives, but these guys will collect your car if you're in like Pretoria or whatever. They'll take it, service it, and bring it back to you.
That is the kind of thing I need in my life literally right now.
Isn't it?
No, I mean like right now. Rustenburg's is a little bit far for me, maybe. I'll talk to them now and ask them how Douglas Dell works for them. But if there were people that did that all over the shop,
I know.
I would be in. Sign me up now. I'll take two.
I know. I mean, it's just, you know, you don't want to think about that. But the reason I want to do it, because, you know, the holidays are coming and people drive long distances.
And you need to do that.
Right. Get your car in
you
shape.
You must get your car in shape.
I mean, the last thing, if you're going away on holiday and your car isn't in perfect condition, you worry the whole way there. And trust me, there's nothing worse to screw up your holiday.
And
than,
it takes one screw up.
I know. And then you end up on the side of the road and your holiday's ruined and you don't have a car. It's just as... by the way, try getting your stuff sorted out in that week between Christmas and New Year. You're going to be... No one's opening up to fix your wheel.
Yeah. And they'll nail you as well because they know. Captive market.
Sure.
Yeah.
So these guys, I think, have got a pretty damn good idea.
It's almost one of those ideas where you think, why haven't people been doing it like this forever?
Well, some clever people have in Rustenburg at Land Rover. And we'll meet Christo, who's the dealer principal there, and we'll talk to him about it. And maybe it works for you. All right. Before we get into that, though, Tsiki Mazwai, she came up yesterday. Someone actually tipped me off to this on a message. We've got the smartest audience. They tell me what's in the news. I don't always know what's in the news until you tell me. Someone said to me yesterday, have you seen what this crazy Tsiki Mazwai has done? So she put up a status on Twitter where she basically said the people who got robbed at FNB Stadium, at the Global Citizen thing, which was a horrible situation.
Yes.
She said, oh, they deserved it because they're elites. And she's glad they got stabbed because it wasn't for the people. It was just for these elites. Now, I think that has got to be one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. But she's not apologizing. She's doubling down. This woman is so crazy. She's so out of touch with reality. She's so self-absorbed that she's unable to even recognize in the criticism she's receiving that in some way she's overstepped a line. She's a complete fucking nutcase. And I've met her, and she really is in person as well. There is no redemption available to her. But listen to this. This is what she says now. All right?
Good morning. I'd like to respond to the lies that are being peddled by the media. I did not say that the festival goers deserve to be robbed. What I said was, how dare you put a high-class, middle-class, elitist event in the neighborhood of the poor and expect nothing to happen. That is spitting in the faces of the poor. And I said that anybody who spits in the poor faces of the poor does deserve that.
So
and
what
yes,
she's,
my Africa.
So what she's saying, by the way, is that poor people rob. That's also what she's saying.
Yeah.
You have a,
I picked that up as well.
Don't let the rich and middle class people go near the poor, because the poor will rob you. That's how they're pre-selected. They're programmed to rob, which is even more patronizing than anything that the media, and by the way, I love this. She's learned this from Donald Trump. Criticize the mainstream media and it seems like you're a hero.
Lies
who
peddled.
Spits in the poor, faces of the poor, does deserve that. And yes, my Africa. In Africa, we don't spit in the face of the poor. We don't gloat. South Africa has got the highest rate of inequality in the world. I mean, we've got the largest number of poor people compared to a small number of rich people.
Do you know that inequality has dropped by degrees, I mean, by exponential amounts since the kinds of inequality that we had 40 years ago, not just in this country, but in the world. But of course, the facts don't matter here. It's about Ntsiki's ideology. And she really doesn't believe that, for example, unemployment or or the high price of fuel or of goods or of a VAT increase. She doesn't refer to any of that. She just immediately assumes there's an inequality problem. That's the biggest one that we have to deal with. As if...
Also, is she terribly poor?
No, she's doing fine. Mm. I mean, I can't believe she sells any of her crap, but people buy it, and somehow she's not poor. She certainly doesn't look poor. She doesn't speak like a poor person, however that's meant to sound. And she doesn't live the life of a poor person. She's a fairly... I would say that she's done okay. I don't think she's rich, because no one's going to pay her a lot of money to do anything. But I'd say she's okay. She's comfortable. And she could always borrow from her more successful older sister.
Of poor people compared to a small number of rich people. I'm not going to allow the small number of rich people to make fools and buffoons of the big number of the masses. If you intend...
But who appointed you? This always interests me when people, particularly lefties, start to speak on behalf of the poor. Like, whoever would nominate, which poor people do you know that go, she's our spokesperson, we've chosen Tsiki Mazwai? One person.
Who is she the official spokesperson
she's
of?
No one's spokesperson. She's supposedly carved herself out some kind of woke corner on Twitter. But no one I've ever met, poor or rich, has ever said, this woman is my spokesperson. No one. If you know such a person, please get them in contact with me and I'll apologize personally.
A gig that is for the masses, then you're going to include the community and include the masses. It's not going to be some exclusive event. You did not include the community. You did not. There were vendors not even allowed to sell their stuff. So I don't know what kind of community event this was that excluded the community, and how you're planning to eradicate the poverty when you are contributing to it.
How is this thing contributing confused. To it? I'm also confused. So she obviously is pissed off because she didn't get a ticket. I mean, if you boil it down, that's what it is. Really? It sounds to me like someone who's bitter they didn't get a ticket. Honestly.
It has now created a situation where lots of people were put in danger. The festival should be made to account.
Oh, really?
I will not be used as a scapegoat.
You won't be used as a scapegoat.
Yeah, I know this person sounds like a total moron, and I can't. The world needs fewer total morons.
The festival should be made to account. Mm-hmm. I will not be used as a scapegoat. That's what the media is doing. I did not say that spectators deserve to be robbed. I said that how dare you put this event in the backyard of the poor. And
all right, well, I've heard about enough. Let's just leave that alone. I cannot get over her. She's just
Well, I did not say that she deserved to be hit over the head hard with a blunt object. I just said that people who are total dickheads have no place in the world. Not that she specifically should be euthanized and sterilized, just that dumbness is bad.
All
just
right.
To clear up my words.
Someone says Pareto distribution theory, Tsiki, and that's a very interesting thing if you want to look at that. It's about how in nature there is a law of distribution. There is no equity in nature. Nature does not give all the animals equal amounts of food. Nature does not create an equal number of stars in every corner of the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
Nature does not make resources equally available in all parts of the world. There is no such thing. What nature does is it clusters amounts of things in particular places, and there's a curve. There's an actual scientific theory called the Pareto curve, which you can look up, Pareto. I'm not going to boil it down for you now because it's boring and we don't have time. But there we go. Some people complaining about this. Michelle says, this silly woman is actually saying any business is making money in a poorer community is bad. Yes, that's what she believes.
Yeah, well put.
I'm listening to this twunt talk, says someone else. I don't even know what that is. That's a very interesting word.
I think it's a twat and another thing.
All right.
Twant. Or a Twitter.
That's a, what a great word.
It's either a bad thing from
other
Twitter
thing?
Or a cross between
I think it's
bad
a great word for a bad
a twat.
It's a great word for someone who's an annoying mosquito on Twitter.
Yeah, I think that's what it must be, a twant. All right. Classic.
I don't mean to make a horrible segue, but can we talk about some of these odd scandals that are still coming out from the Me Too movement?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Oh,
yes. Go on. Tell us more.
So, do we remember talking about Les Moonves from CBS? He was the CBS TV network in the States, one of the big executives there. And because of the allegations and investigations swirling around him, it led to, back in September, he had to step down. But because, you know, he's well connected and things were, he has 20 plus years of experience in the TV industry, they wanted him to step down from his position, but they didn't want to lose him as a resource. Mm-hmm. So the company got him in a bit of a sweet spot to say, you can't be our executive anymore, but you can still retain a bit of a position at CBS and you'll get a cool $120 million US dollar payout.
That's a nice payout. But you know what he did, right?
Oh,
I mean, he got this assistant to basically, she had to come in and sit down. I mean, the whole thing's been detailed. You can listen to her story about what happened. And he hasn't denied it, by the way. Mm-mm. She walks in and Les Moonves says to her, I'm just gonna get changed. Which is, it seems that was a move for Harvey Weinstein. He would have a shower and get changed. It's almost like these guys imagine that these girls are turned on by what they look like without their clothes on. None of these are attractive men. Louis C.K.
Blanks down everything.
So then she comes into the room and Les Moonves says to her, you know, I want you to show me your tits and then I need you to suck my dick. This is how blatant he is. And this is a guy who's in charge. He was so powerful in television.
Yeah.
And he was a bully. He used to tell everybody in the TV business what to do. He was very good at his job. I mean, he knew what he was doing. But a total abuse of power in every which way. And a slimy human being.
Mm.
He's married to Julie Chen. The poor woman has been defending him. She's tried really hard to let everybody know that he's a good husband and he's a good father and he's been good to her. But clearly he's a slime ball with anyone who's his inferior.
Yeah, because now he's going to lose out on this.
Or subordinate, because it doesn't sound like he has many inferiors.
Yeah, that's a good point.
He's now going to possibly lose out on this $120 million US dollar payout because of a new allegation that's come out and just shows how stupidly he's handled this case.
Yes.
So the root of the story begins in 1995 when a young actress was called into Les Moonves' office and he tried to get his way with her. According to the actress, whose name is Bobby Phillips, she was called into Les's office. Les stood up, walked over to her side of the desk, said, look at how hard you're making me, and forced her to onto her knees for her to perform oral sex on her.
This makes me so awkward. Doesn't this make you uncomfortable?
Yeah, it's slimy.
I'm not about this.
She was literally saved by the bell because she says the telephone rang and she was he had to pick it up and she was able to dart out and run away. But Bobby, from 1995, was very persistent about making it known to Les, if not the public, that she did not stand for this. This was not cool. Mm-hmm. And since 1995, this is where Les Moonves dropped the ball. Les has been in communication with Bobby Phillips' manager since then, repeatedly sending messages and, as technology advanced, sending text messages saying, look, okay, here's $1,000 for now. Just keep quiet. All right, there we go. I can offer you...
So he's been paying her off and trying to forestall this.
But like unofficially paying her off, like not like settlement agreement.
No,
vibes.
Yeah. It's always Les trying to pitch something new at her and they never accepted it, which speaks of integrity for, 23 years.
So they didn't
years,
accept any?
Nothing.
Okay, so then you can't accuse her of extortion because she didn't take anything.
Which makes her case stronger.
Oh yeah, she's just sparkly clean.
Yes.
She just told everyone your deepest, darkest secret. You must be so embarrassed.
Yes, that's the only reaction.
Les, you are done now. Man. There are most recent takes of Les saying, look, okay, I can offer her a walk-on role on a new TV show. And the manager declined that. And then it escalated to, we can make a whole show centered around Bobby Phillips. Who, by the way, Bobby Phillips, we don't really know today.
No, I've never heard of her.
Oh, but Les, you are done for now. So it looks like he's going to lose the $120 million payout and also the tiny role that he still played today on CBS. But on the other side of the scale, Matt Lauer, who used to work on the Today Show, looks like he has not been coping well for the past year, because it's actually been a literal calendar year since he had to step down as an anchor after the allegations. And we remember those because supposedly Matt Lauer had a button on his desk.
Yeah, he had a button. Like,
push the button and that would lock the office door.
I mean, how creepy is that? That you're a girl.
You're in there and suddenly he visibly presses a button.
Like Dr. Evil, and you see the door close and you're like, I'm never going to get out of here. This guy's trapped me in here. That must be horrifying.
Well, Matt Lauer for the past year has now been essentially stuck at home because his long-suffering wife, I use the term because they've been married for 20 plus years, but they've tried to file for divorce twice and they've both, stopped the proceedings for some odd reason. But the wife has him held by the you-know-what.
Yeah.
Because he does not have a social life. He's supposedly being...
Matt Lauer's wife.
No, Matt Lauer, not the wife.
Oh, right.
Matt Lauer has to account for where he's going, who he's seeing.
Well, let him feel what it's like. Yeah. You know what? I don't know
if that's what it feels like. I mean, it's probably worse to be in the locked room.
I do not have a lot of sympathy for these guys who've been trying to screw every woman that's worked under them. I feel that this is just it's a horrible abuse of power. And I'm not one of those people who believes the victim every time. I'm not saying that. But in this case, I've got not a single shred of sympathy for either Matt Lauer or for Les Moonves or for Harvey Weinstein or any of these people. This is how the American entertainment business has worked for years, and it is wrong. It's wrong.
And to an extent, the British as well.
As a man, I would never countenance that in my own business. And if I found out that there was a guy who was trying to extract sexual favors from a woman in order to get promotions.
And also, how do you enjoy it? Like, how do you enjoy it? I recently dealt with a close friend of mine, lady person, whose romantic interest was kind of trying to use leverage over her in terms of various things, but basically trying to create a case as for, A, how can you argue, how can your arguments for not being more committed and on a more serious level of relationship with me are invalid because X, Y, Z, A, B, and C that I've done for you that make me a great option, and then got a little bit of leverage over her that she could that he could have used in her like personal life.
Right.
Some, shared some secrets and whatever. Nothing like Hitler-y, just some shit that just was personal but that he knew. And basically was like, look, if you do the right thing and be my more serious partner, you don't have to worry about this.
Strong-arming her into
that. Basically blackmailing her into making the relationship a click or two more serious as he'd always wanted it to be and had always been told it's not going to be. But I'm like, what if that works? What if you then are this person's girlfriend and they are your loving, full-time, committed girlfriend and you're like, it's because you won a strategy /
No.
I don't know if blackmail is the word, but you succeeded at making them
you
do it. How do you enjoy that?
How is it possible that you can ever really trust their feelings if you know that part of their reason for being with you is because they're terrified
because
you're going
to out
them?
Because they have to be. Exactly. Yeah. Like, if you make them dependent financially or you have some...
Yeah, but you see...
They tell you some secret about how they feel about someone in their family.
Gord, you're assuming that people have healthy relations between each other. There are millions of humans who are constantly locked in situations that are not of their making, where they are
but
powerless.
How do you enjoy it?
I know, it's awful.
I don't want any kind of sex if the other person's not into the idea.
100%.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It can be uncomfortable at the time, but they must be into it. Yeah. And like any relationship either, I don't want the girl to date me if she doesn't love me. Like,
absolutely. Just love me for me.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not one to really seek enjoyment out of people's misery, but hearing about this,
I mean, Matt Lauer, that's hilarious.
He actually now lives in the equivalent of their granny cottage now. He's been ousted out of the house by the wife and lives in the granny cottage.
And presumably he can't get out of this. Like, he either really loves the wife or she's just got so much on him.
He doesn't want to go through with the divorce because their prenup isn't waterproof.
So
she is looking to getting $20 million as an initial payout. And then they also invested in a lot of property, like around the world. They have like properties in New Zealand and in And. So should they get divorced, she gets half of all of that.
Yeah. So he's sticking in it for the money. I mean, that's just crazy.
If I were her, if it's half of a lot, I'd take my half of a lot and bugger off.
From hosting the Today Show to living in your granny cottage.
Yeah, well, listen, some granny cottages aren't so bad.
How do you spell Lauer? Because I actually got to admit, I don't know who I'm talking about.
Lauer.
And
I
want to see him on the internet.
All right. I sent in my DNA.
Who did you send it into, Cliff?
I sent it in to a company called Helix. They, you do a swab of your mouth.
Okay.
Yes.
And then you send them the DNA sample, and then they tell you, they sequence it, they tell you about any interesting information they can glean from that, what your ancestry might be as a result of that, you know, kind of where your ancestors might come from roughly in the world. And I'm really excited to see what mine reveals. I've got a pretty good idea of what genealogy I have and what information is available to me. And it goes back kind of a long way. But I'd like to know what part of the world my ancestors come from. I think it'd be fascinating. So I'll give you those results when they come back. But they have received the sample. So that's just a little update. Interested?
Yeah, I had mine done. Turns out I'm whiter than Casper, and it's really disappointing. I wanted something cool and exotic. And by that, I don't specifically mean like I wish I was a little bit black. I just mean something. Like,
you mean could
some Moroccan
or a Viking or something?
No, I have that. I have all of the different flavors of whiteness, like from Slavic all the way down through Scandinavian, Celtic, Scottish, everything. But like, I've got a little bit of every kind of white and nothing else. There's like a less than 1% chance I've got some Spanish. And that's like maybe not as like I don't know, I don't care or know whether Spanish people are considered white or not.
Of course,
but yeah, but I mean, I don't care about what the classifications are, but they're definitely browner than the rest of everyone that I'm connected to, who are all various flavors of translucent.
Yeah, well, sorry,
boring.
God. Sorry, sad.
I really am disappointed.
What are you looking forward to with this? Like, why was it important for you to do this?
Well,
apart from just,
I've always said that you need to know yourself, right? Mm-hmm. That's the commandment of Socrates. But the reason I'm interested in knowing myself is because you're exactly half the product of your genes, which you have no say over. That is where your parents come from, that the two of them decided to mate and make you. That's half of you that is in your DNA, that's coded into you, that is how you look, that is what your skills and talents might be from a predisposition point of view.
Mm-hmm.
It's whether you're tall or short, it's whether you're bald or you've got hair, it's whether you're
athletic to stuff
or whether you're not. Those are things that you just can do nothing about. That's what nature gives you. So you need to know that, and equivalent to that, you need to know what kind of upbringing you had. Whether you grew up with money or with food or with opportunities, whether you were stimulated as a child by being given books and
even
being
what
taught
part
things.
Of the year you were born in.
Yeah, I mean, those things do play a role. So
not from a zodiac perspective. They just say that kids born in the first half of the
year have an advantage.
Yeah, because the difference between a 5.5-year-old and a 5-year-old playing the same sport or learning the same lessons at school
is huge.
Mm. It's the same as a 5-year difference in age between a 50-year-old and a 55-year-old, but even more so because you're not at a developmental phase at that point.
Absolutely. So it's interesting to me that you've got to be able to compare both, and then you get a better idea of who you are and where you fit into the world. So I want to know what my genetic inheritance is, and I want to know what my real world living experience is, and put the two together to try and figure out what I still have to learn, try to figure out what's missing from the puzzle.
Yeah.
And in getting closer to understanding yourself in that way, You see, you do have, and Timothy Maurice spoke about this not so long ago when he was on the show, there's a certain part of your personality that's inherited as well. If you had ancestors who were fighting battles from dawn till dusk and brandishing weapons and killing other tribes and basically trying to conquer land, which is largely what, if I go through the male line of my family, every male ancestor I have going back from my father, as far back as I can trace the male lines, has been involved in war. They've all been soldiers. They've all had to be in war for some king or some country or some religion or something.
Yeah.
I'm the first person in my family on the male line that hasn't had to go to war, don a uniform, or, you know. So it kind of tells me something about my inheritance.
Yeah, a bit of that from my side as well. I mean, my dad, I think, was the first one. But he served in the police force reluctantly and for a short while. But I think he was the first one not to go and actually be in an armed conflict going back many generations.
Right. So there must be a part of me that is predisposed to that. And therefore, when I get combative in language, I can't help thinking that that's me protesting too much because I feel in some way inadequate that I'm not actually fighting people, you know, with weapons.
I just wanted to hear it from you then, I guess, not to make myself sound ignorant, but I don't even know a lot about my grandparents, like where they grew up or what they did. And I've never truly had the inclination to
find out more.
Yeah, I'm like,
you're not a little bit curious?
But you go back to every living human being. It's like since the first human beings that could be classified on an evolutionary scale as being modern, you go back in some way since them, some pair of breeding couple have survived enough to have another to produce kids that would successfully breed enough.
It is miraculous.
You are the every single human being in the world is the result of an impossibly unlikely lineage of successful breeding human beings.
Mm-hmm.
For every one that's alive, like millions didn't make it this far.
Correct.
We all go back equally far.
And that I think that's fascinating. It also teaches you about your kinship with other animals. Because you know we're related to every other living thing, even bananas.
But especially to mammals. All mammals share so many traits in common.
Sure.
Adult with an idiot hippie that reckon we all descend from space people. It's like, yeah, but you know, the proof is like, look how different we are than everything else. Look at all the things we can do that nothing else can do. This enlightenment. I'm like, you have fingernails made of the same shit as claws. You have hands and feet that end in five-digit legs that end in five-digit hands and feet. You have hair. You have eyes that work the same. You have a spine.
We don't even have the best eyes.
Yeah, you I have mean, a there spine. Are other you animals, have lungs. You produce milk. You give
better,
live birth.
Have better claws. Have better teeth. Have better.
But it's all made of the same shit.
Yes. No. Absolutely.
Like it's almost like we are the mammal Lego. You've got certain pieces that you have to use.
Yeah.
And you can arrange them in slightly different ways and make a mammal.
But my point was that in evolution, humans always, we assume that we are the apex of evolutionary biology, that we are some kind of final product.
Yeah, the best.
You know,
the front.
We're the beta and alpha tested version of all other kinds of mammals. We are not even the best when it comes to something like sight. There are things like ospreys, which can see for hundreds of miles in absolute clarity. We do not have the best of
everything. What is an osprey?
It's a bird.
But I was told recently, I don't know if this is true, but my friend told me that birds see on a spectrum of UV that we don't, mm-hmm. and they actually have markings all over themselves that are like super beautiful and super complex that other birds can identify them. But you can't see that. You know when you got a UV light and UV paint, kids used to dig it in their bedroom.
Yeah.
Birds look like that to each other. They shine with rave glow.
I mean, there are other things that we don't even have that other animals have. Like bats have sonar, for example.
Yeah, dolphins as well.
Dolphins have sonar. There are also animals that have the ability, like swallows and swifts and other migrating birds, that they have a compass built into them.
They just know where to fly.
They know which way is north. We don't.
Because of being able to pick up on magnetism.
We don't even have the ability, and birds are obviously not mammals, but we don't have that
Snakes
ability.
Snakes can tell where shit's coming from by feeling its movement in the ground. Like,
sure.
Yeah, crazy stuff.
I mean, don't think you're the best is the point. And I'm interested in
And being
this.
Smart might not be a good... I mean, lots of species have out-survived us by miles and will as well. If we'll do so as well if we don't destroy the planet. I mean, crocodiles have been going way longer than we have and will probably go way longer than we will. Being intelligent might not be the greatest adaptation of all. A lot of shit has outlived us and will outlive us without mm-hmm. having to learn to use calculators.
Michelle says, this is a known fact. Trauma is passed on through the genes. The concentration camp survivors have found their offspring to have the trauma in their genes.
I can fully believe that.
That's Michelle. All right. Well, listen, I want to talk about how you can get ready for the holidays, because that's all anybody cares about right now.
Amen.
Try to get anyone to think about, talk about, or act on deadlines or work right now.
You're nope.
fighting a losing battle.
Hell to the no.
This is a very, very tricky and slippery slope. If you think you're going to get a whole lot of work done, you are living in cloud cuckoo land. People are thinking about holidays, and when you think about the holidays, you've got to think about whether or not your car is in a condition to take you somewhere without breaking down. Now, a lot of people, you go off, you buy a car, maybe it's first hand, maybe it's second hand, but you need to have the thing serviced, and that is a pain. Nobody goes, oh, I'm so excited, it's service day. You have to arrange a whole lot of things, make your day work around it. I've always had this problem because I wake up really early. And to have my car serviced, I then have to do the show and then drop it off after, and it usually takes an extra day. I mean, that's just how it works, right? This morning, I've got some good news for you. Because if you're planning on driving somewhere out of town this festive season, if you only commute a short distance to work and back each day, a summer holiday could be your longest trip of the year. And with the festive season being synonymous with high rates of road deaths and injuries, you must make sure your vehicle is fit for journeys during the holidays. So I've realized this, and thanks to the team, and they got into contact with us and told us about this, at Land Rover Rustenburg. They are prioritizing their excellence in their work, customer convenience. And we're going to talk a little bit this morning about holiday vehicle checks and advice about servicing your car. Christo Henning's here from Land Rover Rustenburg to tell us more. Hey, Christo, how are you, man?
Hey, good morning.
How are you?
Having fun.
Good.
Very excited to be here.
Well, it's nice to have you here. I mean, yeah. I looked through the statistics the other day. We got like 80 people in Rustenburg who listen to us, but you're talking about people in all parts of South Africa, and particularly in Pretoria.
Yes.
And you guys have come up with a brilliant idea of saying to people, look, don't stress. We'll come and collect your car, service it in Rustenburg, bring it back.
Yes.
I mean, are you the only guys yes. doing this?
Well, at this moment, it sounds like it.
Sounds amazing.
I'm quite excited to embark on this journey. I think getting back to what you just said was, for you to have your car serviced
yeah.
occupies time. It takes time
Definitely.
Out of your schedule.
Yeah.
So the initial thinking was to, how do we tick a box in your life whilst you carry on with what you have to do? Can we pick up your car? Can we drop the kids off at school? Can we do whatever?
Sure.
It's really just not about
this is brilliant because
picking up the car. That's just the start of it.
When you think of a dealership like this, and you guys service cars, you sell cars. I mean, you're the dealer principal,
yes.
so you're the guy who sells the most cars.
Yes.
So I'm interested. I want to talk about that too, because we know part of the economy not growing at the moment is people aren't buying enough cars and they aren't buying new cars.
Yes.
But we'll talk about that in a second. The holidays come, people are nervous. I mean, I hear anything funny going on in my car, and I immediately think, oh, God, it's going to fall apart in any minute now. I'm going to be sitting on the side of the road. All my wheels will have fallen off. I get very paranoid about these things.
Now, driving on the freeway, and the undercarriage will stop, and you'll continue.
I don't want that to happen. But I always am very careful about getting my car serviced within that window, because if you don't, there are also, the implications for when you try to sell it.
Yeah.
It costs more. It falls outside of the window period that service needs to have.
Yes.
You got to look at things like tires and windscreens. And what are the most important things you guys look at?
Well, there's about 160 odd points that we look at.
Wow.
Yeah, getting the car on the lift is purely just the start of it. It's really literally about every single thing. Working, all the working
sure.
parts, and then it needs to go onto our. Obviously, these, as you would know, these vehicles are extremely sophisticated, so it goes onto our computer systems, and we run daily updates from the UK on those.
So that's diagnostic tests.
It's diagnostic tests. It's really taking a deep dive into your vehicle's health and making sure that you are okay.
It's like a physical for a human being.
There we go.
I don't get plugged into a computer. I hope not anyway. Not soon.
But what would they find, Gord?
Nothing good. Nothing good.
Nothing good.
Pirate software.
So, Christo, what are the most important things that you check? I mean, I know you say 160 things, but
yes.
What are the most important things that people are often negligent about? And when they don't go for a service, they think, oh, well, as long as I tick these boxes, everything's okay.
Yeah, Gareth, actually, it's quite shocking how people are just really not focused on stuff that's really just in your face, like tires. Feathering of tires.
What is feathering?
Feathering is where your thread on the vehicle, on the tire, actually starts to point in a direction and it breaks off pieces of rubber. And that's mainly caused by running your tires too flat or too hard. And those kind of things. Wheel alignment should be set at least every 10,000 kilometers on any vehicle. Doesn't even matter what vehicle it is. In actual fact, the more you do it, the better.
Wow.
Tire care is something that the South African public, in my opinion, just really don't pay too much attention to, or enough attention to, really.
So when I go for a service for my car, I usually am just thrilled that it's clean afterwards.
Yeah, but that's the
thing. Yeah, it's like the only time my car gets cleaned as well.
That's the biggest measurement, isn't it?
Well, it gives
me... If it looks good, it's working.
All right, the guys did what they have to
do. It is amazing. I mean, you could take my car today, and you're going to take it away to Rustenburg, and you could just clean the inside. And I would think, wow.
I'd believe you. Yeah, but there's room for scamming there.
It's true, isn't it?
Yeah, it's true. So what else do you look at? Tires are obviously a big thing. I mean, how do you even know if your engine, is that where you plug in the machines?
Yeah, and it goes through every single one of the components, electrical components, solenoids,
brakes,
valves,
are one area that brakes. I suppose people...
It goes through every single one of the electronic components and make sure that everything will work and function as it is supposed to. You know, the thing is with electronics these days is that small things can happen that can really, really cause a big problem.
Yeah.
So making sure in advance that all those things are intact and it works properly and the signals and the communication from the various components actually gets to the main box, the computer of the vehicle, is essential to make sure that everything is functional in the way it should.
This feeling of warmth and security, like hearing it described, it's like your tax return is all in order and your investments are on the up.
Yeah.
And like, right. You just got a physical and the dentist said you're fine.
Yeah.
And like, oh, I'm like, I'll keep talking about this mythical situation where the car is so perfect.
But this sounds to me a lot like, you know, we've got this really stupid government and they weren't able to look after Eskom. They didn't maintain Eskom. So now we have not enough power. We have these load shedding situations because they didn't build enough power stations, new ones. They don't have enough coal supply. They basically have no idea how to maintain things. And this goes for cars. A lot of people are driving around on the roads with cars that are not roadworthy, true, that are dangerous to the rest of us. So you may look after your little piece of the world and your vehicle, but there are other people driving around who... It's clearly don't give a damn.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just on my way here this morning, it was quite interesting, I must tell you.
Tell me.
I had this high ace, believe it or not, Ciaia, back in the day, coming past on the left-hand side, and that vehicle is clearly just not roadworthy.
I mean, was it falling apart in front of your eyes?
The right front tire goes all
wobbles.
Wobbly. It's unreal.
Yeah.
The left side of the vehicle is on the pavement, the right side of the vehicle is on the tire.
Makes me crazy.
You've got to understand that some people
next
have got
level,
to,
isn't it?
Some people are in an economic position where you've got to get the job done.
Yeah, but Gord.
But it's not to an extent, Gord, where you're putting other people's lives at
you're
risk.
You're transporting other people.
No, I
they
got
don't
you.
Have a
I'm
say.
Agreeing with you. Yeah. I'm agreeing
drives
with you. And
crazy.
Neither do the people in the cars around you. So I'm saying it's, you know, you've got to have a degree of empathy, like for those people who go miles past their service date or who run their tread possibly a little bit further. But once you can clearly see this thing is like dangerous, obviously, then you can't, no matter what, like there's no excuse for it.
Well, I've seen number of cars where their lights don't work at all. At night, you're driving along and you just see them because your lights are on.
Yeah. True, true.
Well, I mean, I went a long period. I can't say how long it was because I only found out at the end, but I went for a long period with my old beloved Polo that got stolen. And I got stolen having had it fully serviced and put new tires on it so I could drive it from Cape Town to Joburg. It got stolen 3 weeks later. Anyway, I didn't know that for ages my one rear brake light wasn't working. Someone eventually told me from driving behind me, and I was like,
You know, no one would know, mostly.
No one would.
So you got the lights. Let's look at the other things. Electronic systems, as you already said, there's a computer in most of these cars these days, yes. Particularly these Land Rovers.
Very advanced, yes.
Windows, wipers, wheels, tires, brakes, suspension.
I don't know how many people actually know that windscreens actually form a very, very integral part of a vehicle's structure.
Yeah,
it is not just an add-on. It actually forms part of the structure of the vehicle. Hence,
it holds the thing together.
It holds it together, and it's a very big safety component as well. So chips and cracks on windscreens is really it's a really big problem. It's not a small problem. Windows, electrical windows that's not working properly is a problem. Vehicles that double lock, is not safe anymore. Purely because those doors actually get jammed.
Yeah, people can jam them with those jamming devices.
But as well as when those vehicles are in an accident, those doors just don't open.
And of course, we're not living in the 1980s anymore, where you could take a pair of pantyhose and use them as a belt.
As a fan belt. Yes, no, it doesn't
remember
work
those days?
No.
now all this stuff is so technologically advanced, you can't have it just fixed by some schmo on the side of the road.
I'm fascinated by this locking situation because I don't know what level of doors I've got, and if they don't open in an accident, that's not good.
Yeah, look, most vehicles are designed to accommodate for eventualities like that, but vehicles in our country does not allow for double locking anymore, as they used to.
Yes,
even though they do come with a function of that, they don't enable it
anymore. Oh, really? Yeah. I wonder why would they not
purely
do that
from a safety perspective. Oh, it is not okay. It's not the safest thing to do anymore. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I know, for example, a friend of mine was saying the other day his aircon broke down, and in this heat.
Yeah, that's a problem, isn't it?
I cannot live. Even with load shedding at my house, my fan's not working. I was like, kill me now, please. I'm too physically large to fit in my fridge, and just kill me. That's it. I can't live with this anymore.
But this guy was saying, oh, he's got to get his... What do you do with an aircon? How do you service an aircon in a car?
Well, it's mostly gas related, if there would be a leakage of some sort.
Yeah.
But it's generally just filling up the gas and making sure that it is still in good nick.
All right. Then we've got the actual exhaust system. That's a whole other thing. The warning equipment. When those lights go on, you should be worried.
Yeah,
I mean, unless they're malfunctioning, in which case you should also be worried.
Yeah, in general, when there's a light on, just worry.
Yeah,
worry and phone the dealer.
Sure.
And people tend to it's fine. We'll get to the next stop on it, to the next filling station, or to the garage, or whatever the case may be. And most of the times, that's actually where the problem comes in, because it really literally takes seconds for a vehicle to overheat, and to really get into serious problems.
Yeah. Sometimes you don't know what the light means either. There's like different shaped lights, and then there's one that comes on that you've never seen before. And that's when I get totally terrified. I've never seen this light before. I don't know what the ninja star, the blue ninja star. What does it mean? The skull and crossbones can't be good.
Yeah, it's interesting how people differ. Some people buy a car because it's a nice car. It's a flashy car. It's got the power. It's got the look and the style. Other people buy cars because of its safety. Other people buy cars because of purely just performance.
And reliability.
And then you get people that actually really, really go and study their owner's manual.
And they know the horsepower.
How interesting is that when the phone rings and the customer says, so I have read on page number 13 that this said vehicle has got the ability to auto-clean its windscreen when it's raining, but there was only a fly or a moth that flew, and then the wipers start. And then you need to know, okay, so page 13, paragraph.
So you have to know everything. Because they're going to be those geeks who know.
Yeah, and they want to prove they know more than you.
Everything. So yeah, it's interesting.
Tell me, Chris, though, you're the dealer principal, so you sell all these cars. I mean, what have sales been like in 2018?
Sales are quite interesting at the moment. Obviously, there's all these negativity that we are being confronted with. Mm-hmm. But I think, by and large, if we clear away all the murkiness and all these other funny stuff that people tend to spend their time on, business is not bad.
Oh, really?
Business is not bad.
Tell me what is the most expensive car you sell?
About 2.5 million rand. Can go up to 3 million.
Sell any of those this year?
No, we haven't. Oh. We haven't.
I'll take one. It's only December, and I've still got time to make your year. Yes. Screw it. I feel bad. You've tried. You deserve to do a 3 million.
Gordo, you got some extra cash?
I won't anymore after this, but just right. Sign me up.
Well, let's just burn it.
I'll have to finance the last, 500K. Is that
We can work with that. We can work with that.
That's amazing. I'm also curious, what's the second-hand market like at the moment?
Second-hand market, also under pressure.
Yeah.
The vehicles that we do sell is more your premium kind of vehicle. I'm fortunate in the sense that I have Ford and Mazda, Volvo as part of my portfolio.
Wow, you've got a lot of cars in this. It's not just Land Rover.
No. We don't just do the Land Rover. Yeah. But Land Rover at this minute, that's where I'm focusing on, and that's where we want to get customers to almost relook at this proposition, relook at the brand.
God, I drove it last year around this time. Is that Range Rover Velar? Oh,
I remember when you had that.
Jesus, that's a car.
Yeah, that's an awesome motorbike.
I remember when you thinking had that. About you mentioned that it a lot. It was parked out front here quite often.
Yes.
Your discussion about the different models that you sell brought me to a question that I've been meaning to ask in the interview so far, which is which models does this service that you're talking about pertain to? What kind of cars are you willing to fetch and service?
At this moment, we will be only focusing on Land Rover, Range Rover, Jaguar.
Mm-hmm.
And that's purely to obviously offer that premium service.
Sure.
Listen, let's face it, we're talking about a completely different customer here. We're talking about a person that's really got other things to do other than worrying about their mode of transport and the maintenance
of
that.
They would appreciate a service like this.
And they've kind of paid for it. You know, they haven't paid for the service, but they've paid for premium bonuses in what they get with the...
Sure. And so here's what you do. If you want to experience this kind of customer convenience, then what you need to do is get hold of Land Rover Rustenburg, particularly if you're in Pretoria, Centurion, that kind of area, Hartbeespoort Dam, those kinds of areas, because, I mean, the people there, you've got a long way to go. So let them come and pick your car up. Is that how it's going to work?
Yeah, that's the plan.
You pick it up, you service it, you bring it back.
That's what we do.
Same day. God, that's incredible. All right, so they are in Rustenburg, but you can call them on 014-597-6300. That's 014-597-6300. Just take that number down on your phone now and give it a try. You might just save yourself an entire day of stress and having to worry about how do you get it there and how do you get it back and what if my appointments, dropping the kids off in the morning or all these other things are a problem. You need to get hold of these guys at Land Rover Rustenburg. That's 014-597-6300.
And presumably you're on the Google machine as well.
That's where we are.
Okay, so you can look them up, Land Rover Rustenburg, all right? Very nice to meet you. Thank you, Christo.
Listen, thank you so much for the time.
We're going to try this, pleasure. And if it works for me, then I'll obviously be telling other people about it here and everywhere.
And take note, people who sell less expensive cars, this is a good idea that I would like as well for my non-Land Rover.
There we go. Well, sorry, Gord, they're not interested in your car. Sorry. All right, so here is... Clever Kid 1987, he says, Christo sounds very cool. Oh, there we go. You should get a job in radio. Gordlaws, geez, you are funny today, says Ankia.
Thank you, Ankia.
All right, very good. All right, thank you, everybody. That's about all we got time for this morning. We've got to wrap this little party up, and we will see you tomorrow between 6 and 9. Tomorrow, Pumi Mashiko makes her triumphant return. We've got John Flismus on the burning platform, which should be hilarious. And we've got a slew of really, really interesting guests, including tomorrow, I'm happy to say, none other than the singer Anthony Hamilton, who is out here from America, and we got to speak to him. You will hear all of that and more live tomorrow on cliffcentral.com. So don't miss out on a thing, all right? Don't want to miss a thing.
This is CliffCentral.com.